Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
So, Six Nations after a break week really kickstarts again in a big way. We have France against Italy on Friday night. We have Ireland-Wales on Saturday, followed by Murrayfield-Scotland against England. So it will be potentially a decisive weekend on a few different fronts. We have Andy Dunn in studio. Hello, Andy.
Hello, Joe.
And Liam Toland, you're there?
I am indeed, Joe. How are you?
Very well. So the Welsh team is in, which we'll come to in a second. Increasingly the word, I mean, they're whispers and they are unconfirmed and they come with a big health warning. But the whispers are that Tadhg Furlong is losing that race to be fit for the match. Maybe he was always going to lose it and they wanted to keep this as last minute as possible from a Welsh preparation point of view. But Tadhg Furlong out, Liam. I know your heart breaks. He's your favourite player.
He is. I've just been really excited by watching him because on top of his freakish scrummaging quality that has been tested at the highest level, what he's doing around the ball is just so interesting. And when you marry him with, say, Scott Fardy, the Australian second row for Leinster, and you see what those two guys, a tight head and a second row, are doing creatively around the ball and allowing their teammates to run certain lines. And Furlong is such a big ball carrier himself that he actually gets defenders to sit in on him. They can't second guess. They have to fix on him. And he has the skill set and the swiveling head to be able to unlock space for somebody else. And oftentimes with Furlong, the space isn't necessarily unlocked two or three passes from him. It's much wider. We see with Leinster how Leinster wingers are scoring tries and they get the plaudits for it. But the real work of creativity is happening with someone like Tadhg Furlong. My concern, if he is out, is who do you pick at tight head? And there's no doubt that Porter has earned the right to play and to be picked. But I think we should exercise caution around that because I'm convinced that Robin McBride, the Welsh scrum doctor, the minute Furlong's hamstring went, he would have been working with Rob Evans and Ken Owens and Samson Lee around a huge plan to really introduce Porter to a whole new level of scrummaging at international level. Porter was fantastic against Italy. Lineup was super, scrum was super, and his work around with the ball and without the ball was fantastic. But I think we really, if he is picked, we really have to taper our expectations of that player on the pitch because scrummaging against Wales is going to be an altogether different challenge. And I think plumbing for someone like a John Ryan or a Stephen Archer, who are that bit further down the road in terms of their education of tight head scrummaging, might be a clever move, but it remains to be seen.
Yeah, because Andy, people know the Porter situation, I'm sure, but for those who don't, he's still only 22 and he has only switched in the last year, 18 months, from a loose head to a tight head and has made about five or six starts. Certainly we're talking less than 15 professional appearances. So as Liam says, it's entirely likely Wales would be eyeing this guy up a long way off.
Well, I think I'd fully agree with Liam in terms of his concerns. You've got a nice situation between Porter and Tadhg Furlong. Tadhg Furlong is literally, you know, he's the Rolls Royce of props in that he can scrummage, he can carry, and as Liam very eloquently explained, he can be your first receiver in attack. So it's almost freakish, you know, you just don't see tight head props who can do that. He's a rarity. Interestingly, in the Welsh game last year, we hadn't really introduced that into our game in attack, and Tadhg was one of two or three guys who carried the ball as a first receiver off a ruck in the first 5 minutes. They got turned over because they'd no get out, they'd nowhere to pass to, but that is an aside. Porter is a similar player. He's actually electric around the field, hugely explosive. But what do you want from your tight head prop going into, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Old Warren can be a bit of a cynic, and Liam mentioned Robin McBride. If he sees a 21-year-old going in tight head with less than 10 professional games under his belt in that position, I would suspect he's got a big target sign on his chest. John Ryan, Don Lennon mentioned, I wasn't sure the exact figures, but I believe John Ryan has played against the Scarlets alone more than eight times. And the full Scarlets front row playing for Wales, he's got a bit of knowledge there in terms of, you know, how they move, their depth in scrummaging and all those things that I don't understand.
I appreciate neither of you have a clue what you're talking about when it comes to the front row as well. But the one thing we can all agree is that experience counts for a lot.
Yeah, I'd like to add in as well, Joe, that the tight outside of the scrum obviously is really the hardest place. So it's a combination thing. If Porter's been picked at tight head, who's the tight head second row behind him? And that's of crucial importance. And that goes back to what Andy is saying there about the lack of experience in that position, because when it comes down to it, if you think that Porter or whoever the tight head is going to be in between Rob Evans and Ken Owens, there's a fair chance that Samson Lee will abandon to a degree whoever's playing it loose set to target Porter. So Porter's going to get into positions that he's never been in before. Mm. And that is a knock-on impact to the second row behind him. And there is that symbiotic relationship from a scrum half out half position where they don't need to know where they are, they just know. And a second row in a scrum is very similar to that. And a tight head second row is very similar. So what they're doing in training may be very different in the reality. So Porter might get into positions that the second row has to kind of figure out, well, do I follow him? Do I not follow him? What do I do? So I think it's a fascinating part of our game that it's poo-pooed too often by commentators that they kind of say, come on, get on with the game. I think whoever's the second row tight head behind, if it is Porter, that's a fascinating contest. And if it's someone like Ryan, who was obviously a super scrummaging second row, or Devin Toner, that relationship is still very young and immature for Porter. So it's a fascinating part of the battle. And there's no doubt in my mind that Wales will not give anyone a break, whoever that guy is. Yeah. And I would certainly pick the guy who's got more lessons learned in that position at this stage for this game.
Right, interesting. And will it definitely be, James Ryan, by the way, has been past fit. Will it definitely be Ryan or Toner? Henderson just doesn't go near the...
Well, he's typically on the loose side. Okay. Typically.
And is it a big switch for? I mean, I'm not saying that Henderson is necessarily the right choice, but is it as big a deal for a Henderson to switch over to tight head territory as it is for a Porter?
I think it's about styles in many, many ways. Right. And traditionally, the number five jersey was your tightest scrummager, and traditionally that guy, the likes of Neil Francis, etc., the bigger fellas, Paul O'Connell and stuff for that. But I think it goes beyond that in a sense, because that scrummaging technique is so important. And when you look at where Wales are weak, if you're thinking of how you attack, Wales gave away 11 penalties at scrum time last season, 8 of which were down to binding and breaking and collapsing the scrum.
Yeah.
So they are vulnerable at that part of the scrum. Now that's very nerdy, but that these guys, that's the level they'll be at. So how do you maximize that outcome for Ireland, and how do you prevent it from happening to us? So positioning the people in the certain places is of huge importance. It really is. Not to mention then what you want from your player. So Ian Henderson is a phenomenal athlete who plays 6 and 4. If you put him into 5, then you have to expect that that's going to fatigue him as well. Like if you have 10 scrums and they last 30 seconds, like it is phenomenally exhausting what these guys do. And that's why James Ryan is such an amazing new player, because for such a young fella, he's just brilliant at that as well. So you have to be conscious of who you pick and where you pick them, and where Wales will target, and most importantly, like where Ireland's tries coming from, where Wales tries coming from. And that's why I'm so fascinated by scrum.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. And I presume because the injury to Furlong happened in the Italian match, the Welsh have had 2 weeks to think about this on the very distinct possibility that he doesn't make the game, which, you know, from moment one, anyone who's anyone in rugby said, front row, I don't know. I mean, it would want to be a minuscule hamstring issue, and he limped off, so it can't be that minuscule for him to make this game. So I would think that the Welsh have been planning for this. One last question, which strikes me as you talk there. So potentially it's Ryan or Toner behind Andrew Porter in this very difficult examination of Porter. Is it the kind of thing where the experience of Toner Liam would be of huge help to a Porter in this situation as opposed to Ryan? Or is it actually more about the fact that whoever you pick, whether it's Ryan or Toner, they will still have a very young relationship with Porter, and that's almost the issue?
Well, at least you're mentioning Leinster, and the reason I'm saying that is because these guys have spent hours in training where they would have spent hours sitting down nerding about what happens when this in the learning process. And you've got to be conscious that there's only so much Porter has learned. And the most important, valuable lessons he learned is when he plays in Six Nations as a tight head, because like we saw how John Ryan did really well in the first scrum he came on against France, and Devin Toner was behind him. The very next scrum, because the breakdown in concentration, there was an injury, all that kind of stuff happened. And all of a sudden, completely different scrum. First time Ireland did exceptionally well. And only moments later, Ireland did exceptionally poorly. And that's a lesson that these guys need to learn. And maybe there's other positions on the pitch that can expose you like tight-head scrummaging can, but it can really expose you badly. And the only way you learn is to learn. And it's to get that. And I think if you speak to any top-class elite international front row, they'll say that's where you learn. You know, a scrummaging machine will teach you only so much, or the modern versions thereof. So I think the fact that Toner and Ryan are in the same training team and the same week as Porter will be a huge addition to him if he does start.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, these are still whispers about Furlong. We're hoping, obviously, Andy, that he's fit. But this will be a worry for everyone concerned. I mean, if you're being dominated or struggling badly at scrum, it contaminates to the whole performance.
Yeah, your tight head was well documented with Tighe's re-signing. They're probably your best paid players apart from your Johnny Sexton or Connor Murray. Your tight head is, you know, he's your first name on the team sheet. Yeah. He's the guy in modern rugby who probably has the highest capacity to be a high earner, which just in a very literal way shows his value to the team.
Yeah.
I don't believe for 1 minute he's going to be 100% fit. He's certainly not. He's just, with my own kind of professional hat on as a physio, you get it, even a grade 1 hamstring issue that makes you leave a game and come off the field, your natural tissue healing times are about, you know, 21 days.
Yeah.
So,
because even Eddie O'Sullivan on Monday night made the point that when he left Brian O'Driscoll very memorably off the team,
yes,
at Croke,
yeah,
Park,
yeah,
against France, that like they were making the point about Furlong during the week that, well, he's hitting 70% sprint level.
Mm.
O'Sullivan was saying on Monday night that first 70% is the easy 70%,
sure,
and actually,
yeah,
the next 30 is painstakingly slow, and sometimes the laws of physics just apply.
Mm.
And in 07, when he left O'Driscoll off the Croke Park game against France, Gary O'Driscoll had said to O'Sullivan that weekend, he's at about 95%,
yeah,
but you still can't play him probably at test level. So that strengthens the case against Furlong starting.
Yeah, I think your end stage rehab is I fully agree. It's your slowest. And when you think you're fully fit with a hamstring, you probably ought to take another 2 weeks.
Okay.
So for me, I you know, it's probably a little bit of a front as well to discuss, you know, how close it is, but
yeah,
I would say there's no chance.
And it puts a doubt in Welsh minds, should we spend all this time potentially targeting a Porter when,
yeah,
you know, they,
yeah,
probably should. The other selection dilemma, I suppose, is at centre that we might just deal with briefly. Again, the whispers seem to be, Andy, that it's Farrell over Ringrose, even though Ringrose has been in there the last day or two. So weigh up Farrell and Bundiaki for us.
Pretty abrasive, pretty big. Just in physicality, we spoke briefly on Sunday on Tom Farrell. He quite impressed in the autumn internationals. He looks, because of his, you know, imposing physique, he looks like the type of guy who's going to be very, very much banging up the middle merchant. But he was used in a different way. He was actually used even in a different way to how Henshaw had been used prior to Henshaw's involvement. He was used as distributor in a number of, you know, frontline calls off first phase in the back line, particularly from left to right, where he's passing, running at close to full speed, making 20, 25 yard passes off his left hand, which is a huge addition to the back line, just as an attacking threat. So that's why I believe he'll probably, Schmidt will go with Farrell in there at 12 because of what he did in the autumn.
Yeah.
He gained a lot of confidence from Joe from those performances, and I think it's a simple swap in,
yeah,
with again the likes of Ringrose coming back. It's a long term injury, and you've got your end stage rehab, and you've probably like to see in a safer environment 2 or 3 games and a European game under his belt from,
yeah,
Leinster.
These are high stakes at this stage in the championship. Chris Farrell and Bundiaki, Liam, any major concerns, or will they be okay?
I think Farrell probably in his favour has more corporate knowledge of what George Smith's teams are doing. So he's been part of this the journey for the last little while. The type of game we're going to expect, like the last year, Wales Ireland was the highest ball in play game of the Six Nations. So Ireland and Wales in many ways have quite a kicking game, not as much as England as we discussed the last time I was on, but. I think Ireland are going to try and limit Wales's line-out platform, as they've done the last two. It's no coincidence the last two games we've played, we've had twice as many lineouts as the opposition. That's because we're giving away so few penalties, and we're obviously not kicking to touch as an exit. We're more comfortable in possession. So it seems to me that we're going to have a million breakdowns and a million rucks. We're going to go to multi-phase. And then Chris Farrell's role in that then, obviously beyond the starter place, which are very fancy and can open up, will be to contribute heavily to that. And in that environment, I can't see any reason why he cannot contribute as heavily to that. If we want to continue, as we are evolving off our lineouts in certain parts of the pitch, it requires a passing game. And we saw that in autumn, how good his hands were for one of the tries that were scored. Mm. So I think it's going to be high on possession, 50-50 possession, a lot of pick ball in play, and a million breakdowns, a million rucks, a million of that kind of stuff. I think Chris Farrell in that environment, he has other other skills, but in that environment, I think he'll do pretty well.
Okay. So talking generally then, and again, the Welsh team news is that Bigger is back. And I might get your interpretation of what that means. Halfpenny is back after his infection. And Liam Williams comes in with George North staying on the bench. So what are the big worries here? Because I must say, talking to Eddie O'Sullivan, and I'll play you a clip in a few moments. He's not so sure about Irish defensively. Ireland defensively, but Eddie O'Sullivan and Rory O'Connor on Monday. It was quite a sobering chat. They're both pretty worried, was the short version, Liam. I mean, we all got very excited after France and it kind of, you know, Italy, and then we're thinking Twickenham, and suddenly this week the reality of Wales with their injured players back has sobered us all up a bit.
Certainly looking at the three games, I think Scotland is going to be the less difficult of the three. England, because England are playing France and Paris the second last weekend. I think when we play them in Twickenham, as hard as it'll be much easier. I think the game of the season is against Wales this weekend. I think it's going to be extraordinarily difficult. Because Wales have evolved as well. And one of the things that kind of alarm bells to me is Wales have traditionally played a little bit like a Munster game and certainly a little like an Ireland game. When they get into the opposition 22, they just bludgeon and bludgeon and bludgeon. But I think Lee Halfpenny's first try in 5 years was a real eye-opener to me, because Wales got right. This is against Scotland, sorry.
Yeah.
Wales just had a couple of things at play. Their forwards and backs, I think, are definitely, as a group, are easiest of all the teams to mix amongst each other and pass and pop and offload and that kind of stuff. One sidebar is actually they score almost nothing when it goes beyond 8 or 10 passes. They can get into this just cycle of passes and passes and get nothing out of it. But what worried me against Scotland was they got right onto the Scottish line on the left hand side of the as Wales were playing. They did one out pass and they immediately shifted it wide, which is totally at odds with what Ireland are doing, and it's totally at odds with, say, what Munster are doing, and definitely from what Wales are doing. So that kind of new style of rugby, and I think the Scarlets must be influencing, A, how the forwards and backs are interacting, and B, how they're actually sourcing space and getting the ball into space way quicker than we certainly are. Like, we take huge amount of trenches before we can actually score, and I don't think we're going to score the tries we scored against Italy, where we take a 1-0 pass and score. Because on the flip side, Wales defensively, they've eyes up, they look at the breakdown, they look at the ball, but they're also surveying what's in front of them. So it's a really, really difficult task, and I think Wales have improved in that they are sourcing space easier than they were last season.
Okay. I mean, Andy, it's a testament to Gatland that at this stage, his 100th game in charge of Wales, 10 years in charge, that he's willing to evolve and maybe, I presume, take some heed of what the Scarlets players are telling them they've been working on, and we're seeing all the differences that Liam talks about in comparison with just last year. Mm. It's a testament to him. So how worried are you about Wales?
Hugely. I heard a very funny quote the other day about the opportunist, the optimist, the pessimist, and the realist arguing was the glass of water half full or half empty, and the opportunist came in and drank it while they were all arguing. It's classic. Immediately thought of Warren Gatland. That's why everybody's worried about him after 100 tests. Because when faced with adversity in the number of occasions that he's been in, such as 9 British Lions unavailable for his first Six Nations game, he manages to orchestrate a 30-point win against a favoured Scotland side. And you don't do that by accident or fluke.
Yeah.
You do it by, I suppose, instilling a belief in a squad, building a strong backup to who you've got, and probably also he doesn't tend to have a huge focus on one or two executive guys on the field. He has a bit more, he fancies more of a spread and responsibility, and he's run that as a style in coaching since back in the early 2000s with the very successful Wasps group that were full of leaders. And there was a shared responsibility in decision making and execution on the field, and I think it's always stood him really, really in firm ground. He's pragmatic, obviously, because he's, you know, you take Bigger, who's been out for 3 weeks, straight back in.
Yeah.
Halfpenny, straight back in. Williams, straight back in. They're probably all really smart decisions because they're the type of guys, based on their experience, that don't need betting in. It's not a Porter type situation where there's a small amount of risk attached. I think the one area he I'm surprised by is Navidi staying at seven when he's Justin Tipperick as a choice now, who's apparently is fit. But yeah, I mean, everything about the guy is dangerous in the sense, you know, he goes against the grain. Like he's the only guy I know in sport who announces a team on Tuesday and says, go have a look at us for the next 4 days and do what you will with that, because he's prepared to back guys. He's, you know, he's very adaptable. He's one of the first guys to introduce this fancy kind of periodization thing into rugby, where I remember playing Wasps as a player in October, November, and they were garbage. But you knew come April, when you were tired, they were going to kick lumps at you, because he was happy to nearly throw games early on. Not so much as cynical as that, but sacrifice a game or two for the greater cause down the line. So
yeah, it's all very interesting stuff. So if we're to follow on Liam's point about the, and actually quick one, I'll get to Eddie O'Sullivan now. Bigger is no obstacle to them sourcing space and changing their approach. He's well able to handle all that.
Yeah, well, I'm a big closet Bigger fan. I think he's a quality 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then if we're assuming that the days of Bish Bosh, Warren Ball at its most agricultural are gone, Eddie O'Sullivan raised this worry on Monday. Have a listen.
Thought Italy's first try, like, we just overload the short side, which is a fairly basic error. You know, you give out to a club side for doing it, having six defenders on one side of the ruck and being really skinny on the other. And that's what happened to Dan Levy. He got a mismatch, and he didn't help himself, like, on all the line. So, but that's very fixable. The other thing that struck me was that Italy's try inside our red zone, Italy's green zone, where they just threw two long passes and the winger scored in the corner. We defended them all, and we collapsed around them all. We had 10 defenders in around them all. And, you know, Rob Kearney came up and in, but the pass still got out to the winger, and Larmour couldn't stop him. Italy scored an identical try against Ireland at the same end of the pitch 2 years ago, you know, and by just, again, we got too narrow close to the line.
Right.
And that's still there. You know, if teams pound us enough in the corner, we tend to collapse in there and leave the far side of the field open. And then there was, you know, I suppose, the kick chase problem where Teddy Thomas scored. That was a quick lineup, but it's still a transition play. And then, obviously, the one against Italy was a replica, except it wasn't Teddy Thomas. It took a few passes from the Italians, you know. So, like, that's, there are things that are systemic problems. And my worry is, and I think they're all fixables, and you can imagine they're working their socks off on it, that teams like Italy and France causing trouble would worry me that there's bigger trouble coming down the pike if we make those mistakes again, because the next three teams down the pike will hurt you more.
So that was Eddie on Monday. Liam, as fixable as they may be, according to Eddie, they've been around for some time now. And if you take the newfound Welsh propensity to go wide and go wide quickly, as you've talked about, and our narrowness, that leads me to worry that we'll be seeing Welsh tries on Saturday.
Traditionally, this fixture doesn't score that many tries in a sense. There was three tries by Wales and none by us last season, of course. Wales seem to have a defensive system where they fill the field, the 13 players fill out the field, contest breakdowns from time to time, and they got two floaters at the back. Ireland have a similar-ish E type of way of doing it. And the primary thing to get right is to slow down the opposition. So if you have a recycle that's if your opposition are recycling the ball in 2-3 seconds, you're going to be in trouble no matter what system you have.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to slow that ball down. The style of tackle comes into play there. So is it a chop tackle? Can you get someone over the ball? Can you slow it down in any shape or form? Where Ireland are at our most vulnerable is when Argentina in the World Cup or Scotland last year and Italy in the last quarter were able to get clean, quick, recycled ball and put it into space. And we seem to be caught quite narrow when that happens. So A is trying to slow down that ball. B, it's trying to get your big front five guys filling the pitch. So ultimately, you want your out half way out in the far reaches of the tram tracks, in a sense, to push the ball out into the touchline. But when we do turn over, as in when we give away the ball, we seem to be quite narrow in defence. And part of that, of course, Joe, is the style. Like we're
and not to interrupt, but I'll just say briefly, the team with the most turnovers in the championship thus far are Wales.
Yes, so the style of rugby we do, we have the most one-out passes and nothing else happens in the Six Nations, which means that our scrum half gives it to our number eight or our wing forward or whatever else who carries it in. Scrum half gives it to the next line, carries it in. That means that we commit hugely to keep turning over these breakdowns, which means we become narrow. If we do turn over the ball, then we become quite vulnerable to a double pass and get it into space, particularly when you had players in, to be fair to Italy, it's some real speedsters. So then you've mismatches and then you're in trouble. Yeah. So the first thing I think is A, you need to slow down their breakdown. If we are playing, we need to vary the point of our attack too. So if we do turn it over, we have a greater spread and we're less vulnerable to that quick recycle. And then it comes down to, in many ways, in Italy, I think it was concentration, to be fair.
Okay.
I think, and the try against Teddy Tamat, you would argue, was concentration as well. I think Stockdale probably made his read a bit late and got in position a bit late, and playing against a freak like Teddy Tamat who exposed it. So I'd say one of the things is systematic. That when we're in possession, we can honeypot a bit too much, and if we turn it over, we're a bit vulnerable. And the other one is a concentration issue. But I would be confident that Andy Farrell and his style, like they've brought in new changes. Conor Murray as a scrum half tends not to defend behind the breakdown. He tends to drift out into the back line. So that's something that they're trying to get him into the back line further out. So you'll see when Wales are in possession, Conor Murray might be out on the touchline. That's unheard of as a scrum half who traditionally stays in behind the breakdown, but they're decisions they've made. And for every action, there's an equal opposite reaction. There's going to be vulnerabilities. Yeah. And someone like Wales, touching on Dunner's point, someone like Wales are going to pour over the style we do, the one-out carries. And our ball carrier, in that sense, is going to be vulnerable to being ripped away because they'll be practicing it. They'll be expecting it.
Okay. Andy, are you so worried that you're tipping Wales to win?
No, I'm worried enough to
be worried.
I would actually tip Wales to win if either Murray or Sexton maybe come off the field injured, because it's probably another day's argument, but our style of play and attack, as Liam has gone through there, is it can be multi-phase, and multi-phase without an orchestra or a conductor guy in there in the middle can really break down quickly.
Yes.
You turn over a ball with the wrong guys at 9 and 10 who haven't been making the right calls. I mean, it's just essentially there's huge pressure on both Connor and Johnny to remain fit and to remain completely in charge, to remain cold-minded and bloody-hearted and all the things they need to be. And it's problematic. I mean, I mentioned earlier that that's one of Warren's strengths, is that he dilutes responsibility across his team and across the senior players. We tend to not do that. We tend to be very much our 9 and 10 run the show.
Generals,
and as generals, they are outstanding. They're world, you know, in the top 2-3 in their position in the world. But what do we do without them? If anything happens, our attack game goes from what is currently probably not the best attacking game in the world to really mediocre with a risk of turnovers. I think we can win the game with the two guys healthy on the field.
Okay.
I'm very worried otherwise.
Okay. Well, Gatland talked about both of them and having to target them. He said we had some pretty good success not allowing Johnny too much time and space in the ball previously. Our line speed has to be good and we have to put Connor under pressure and his kicking game under pressure. We have to be prepared to be pretty physical against them.
Yeah, he knows exactly what he's saying. That's pretty obvious.
Yeah, there's no interpreter needed there, so that's a concern. Liam, final word for you from you on this game. Are you so worried as to actually think Wales might win this?
Well, I think we need to see the Irish team sheet for a start, and we've discussed the title. I think that's
if Furlong is out and Chris Farrell starts, let's go with that as the most likely scenario at this point.
Okay, that obviously, to a degree, when you take one of the best players in the world, Tadhg Furlong, that's going to have an impact, but it's going to have a creative impact as well. And I think we just taper, if it's Porter, just taper our expectations what he can do around the pitch. Mm. Chris Farrell, I don't think will change the style hugely from Robbie Henshaw. So I don't see a massive thing there. What I do see is that Wales are going to be very much aware of the amount of times we take a one-out pass. And I think it puts a huge amount of pressure on the Irish ball carrier and the guys to rock out. And we just take so much effort to score a try. It's exhausting. And if we don't adjust our style by a tip-ons or pushing the point of attack out a bit further, I think we're going to struggle to win the game. So it's going to be, I think it's the toughest game we have left, without a doubt. And that's taking into account England away in Twickenham.
Maybe I'm the pessimist in this conversation we were having where Warren Gatland drinks the water, but I wonder how quickly we can change our style that dramatically, Liam, in the space of a couple of weeks, or is that possible?
Well, we just don't interact with the ball as forwards and backs as easily as the Welsh do. Now, we saw when we got Scotland how they went completely the far way. They went completely insane, like mental breakdown stuff, way out of our side.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone is advocating that looseness. But if you look at, say, the Welsh back row, like Shingler, for example, he's an animal. And Ross Moriarty, at number eight, he's an animal. They're going to chop tackle down. They're going to cut down. And they're going to have a system to get in on the ball and slow it down and mess it up. Like, if we keep playing the same way, the opposition are learning all the time. So we have to. And even if it's a tip-on pass, and I'd urge you actually to look at that try that Halfpenny scored against Scotland. It was on 11 minutes or something in the opening. Like, to see the interaction of the forwards getting into that position and then what they subsequently did and into space. Like, we're not quite doing that. We just keep going the one way all the time. I think we need to adjust it.
Okay. Last word to you, Andy.
To answer your question, can we change our style in a couple of weeks? No, because we haven't changed it in about a year and a half.
That was my feeling.
It's but you know, it's also our strength. Joe is so prescriptive. He will define a role for everybody on the field. He will define an area for them to be in order to execute their role, and his attention to detail to back that up ensures that it's executed with great aplomb.
Yeah.
And this whole, you know, legendary Monday morning video meeting is not a fake. It's because if you don't execute your job, you're in serious trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe likes to obviously say, you know, perhaps this guy will springboard back from his mistakes, and it's nice sugar-coated language, but the guy who makes the mistake is in big trouble in terms of selection. Mm-hmm. So it makes what can be a bit of a turgid style very effective. The only thing is, we can't really spring surprises on people.
Yeah.
And
sorry, Joe, just, I know Andy had the last word there, but sorry.
I've just for once.
Toland, couldn't you just let it go? No.
No, it sounds like myself and Andy are being purposively negative. I'm not. You're just saying, I think it's such a tough game for us to win. And looking at the margins that are in the Six Nations, like the tiniest of margins are deciding. Like, the French victory, the tiniest of margins are deciding the outcome.
Yeah.
And when you get down to that nitty-gritty nerdiness, that's why your tight head is important. That's why the little style that you employ to try and shift the point is they're only margins. And it's because these guys are playing at such a high level. So it's kind of an optimism within, wrapped up in the worry about the challenge that's facing us.
No. The context is always, we're talking about the number three side in the world who've won 9 in a row and are excellently coached here. But I suppose it's your job to come on a show like this and point out the nuanced points. We'll leave it there. Liam Toland, thank you as ever. And Andy Dunn, thank you. It's nil all in Seville. Back in a second.
Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
Off the Ball on Newstalk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.